Good evening. In the news tonight, North Dakota water protectors are enlisting protection from supporters on social media. The Village Halloween Parade offers a respite from divisive election politics. Senator Chuck Schumer calls out FBI Director James Comey and Donald Trump. And the Freelancers Union is rejoicing over a new bill which protects their rights. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Monday, October 31st, 2016. More than 140 protesters were arrested this past week in North Dakota opposing the Dakota Access Pipeline. According to witnesses, police marked numbers on arrestees' arms, harkening back to the days of the Nazi concentration camps. Those arrested were housed in cement-floored dog kennels without any padding before they were transported far away. Today, water protectors are out again to stop the pipeline. And after reports on social media that police were using Facebook check-ins at Standing Rock to track individuals who arrived at the location to join the water protectors, users from around the country and around the world began checking into Standing Rock. It registers as Cannonball, North Dakota. This as an effort to confuse police. A statement many posters are copying and pasting says, water protectors are calling on everyone to check in at Standing Rock, North Dakota to overwhelm and confuse the police. This is concrete action that can protect people putting their bodies and well-beings on the line that we can do without leaving our homes. Some people checked in to Facebook, others added their own commentary. The Green Party says construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline on Sioux burial grounds is no more appropriate than construction of a pipeline through Arlington Cemetery. It joined a protest in Brooklyn this weekend at Hillary Clinton's headquarters. Protesters entered, they set up a teepee, and they demanded that Hillary Clinton come out against the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline in North Dakota. Until now, she has refused to address the issue. WBAI's Mitchell Cohen was there at the protest.
Here are excerpts from the speeches there, including a number of enthusiastic young people who had never before spoken publicly.
My name is Arnold, and I come from the Quechua Nations of South America, from the Andean Mountains. I come here to stand in solidarity with my northern brothers and sisters who have fought for their indigenous rights, for their land, for their lands, and for their self-determination, which are people that fought for 500 years now from across the continent. I'm glad to see all of you here from every nation across the world to stand in solidarity with a movement for self-determination and indigenous governments of our own land. This fight that goes beyond just environmental rights and goes beyond just the protection of our water, but it goes towards the destruction of a colonialist system that has allowed for that has pushed each and every one of us within a situation where our lands have been destroyed and exploited for the purposes of corporate greed. You can see in Iraq and in Syria, the purpose of oil and the need to exploit people of color is one endemic within the U.S. government. We must stand in solidarity with people across the world to protect their lands. And I come here in solidarity with my indigenous brothers and sisters and brothers to say that we from the South also believe that we must rise again, that we as the ones that we call Latinos have indigenous roots within them. I am from Bolivia, Kola Suyu Kani. I am from the Kola Suyu Nation. That is from my indigenous language of Quechua. And I thank you all for being here today.
My name is Mo, and I'm Palestinian, and I'm here to show my solidarity as well as part of an indigenous nation with what's going on with Standing Rock, and to show also that this is a struggle that goes beyond the borders of South America and North America as well. And the people of Palestine know about what's happening in North Dakota, and they stand strongly and firmly against the pipeline in Dakota, and this must not happen. We all here in New York or every else in the world, like in, even in Israel, live on land that once belonged to indigenous people, and we try to coexist and live with that, claiming sometimes that we were not there, we did not do it, we were born here. But now it's 2016 and we're alive and it's still happening and we're witnessing it, and it's a big shame that this is happening in 2016 and we don't have enough power to stop it. So thank you all for coming out here today.
Thank you so much.
I normally never speak. I normally don't speak. Most of you guys know me. I take pictures. I'm a photojournalist. But I just want to point out something that hasn't been addressed yet. The same day that the Native Americans were brutalized in North Dakota, the Bundy verdict came out. And we saw white privilege in action with the Bundy verdict. Now, this was a group of white people that occupied federal land with weapons, armed with weapons, threatening to resort to violence. And they were found not guilty. How is that possible? How is that possible that they were found not guilty and then the same day we're seeing Native Americans brutalized on their land?
Racism.
That is white privilege at its best, people. And we need to fight against that. We need to show the world that we are not going to stand for that. We're not going to stand for the racism, like Morgan was saying. We're not going to stand for that. And I just want to point that out, that this is not just about the environment here. This is about racism and class and oppression of people of color. Exactly.
Protesters opposing the Dakota Access Pipeline at Hillary Clinton's headquarters in Brooklyn this weekend, thanks to Mitchell Cohen. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. This evening, New York City is a canvas for fantasy and political expression, the 43rd annual Village Halloween Parade, a festive occasion in the midst of the hate speech and division anchoring the election.
The Halloween Parade, at its soul, is about bringing people together.
Jean Fleming is artistic director of the Halloween Parade.
It's the one night when everyone marches together and everyone gets along. We're not divided up into the Jewish parade, the Puerto Rican parade, whatever it is. It's New York. It's the beauty of New York that everyone is getting along. And it sends such a message to the world, you know, of if we can all walk together and get to know one another, especially in our imaginations, that there's a chance that there would be peace in the world and that this kind of horrible division that we're seeing happening in the country could be alleviated.
Fleming came up with this year's theme, Reverie, which she says is an occasion to feed the soul.
I think the beginning of the theme, actually, and aside from the fact that the election, I think, has just distracted and worn everyone out and been so utterly disheartening. There was a night when I was lying in bed and my phone alarm went off. It was BBC News, and it said that 47 children had been killed in a hospital in Africa. And I realized how much our souls in this modern world are bearing, that if in the middle of the night, sitting, you know, in my home in New York State, I hear about the deaths of 47 children, and then you wake up and you just see the horrible news and what's going on with the election. So my feeling was that that what people needed was soul healing, that people needed to be able to go into a space, to unhook, unplug, get away from the news, get away from the devices, and not do it in a passive way. I'm not talking about dropping out. What I'm talking about is going into that liminal space of reverie where artists create, where you go when you start making something. And it has a way of healing one's soul. It's people talk about it when they sew or when they knit. Maybe it's meditative. But the difference is that when you go into the state of reverie, you create something. This is the space in which artists create. And the beauty of the Halloween Parade is it allows everyone to create, not just artists, but everyone. And so going into that space, and even if it's the simplest thing of understanding what your Halloween costume is and what you're going to create for yourself, what this night is going to be for you, who you want to be, is something that just in and of itself helps to heal the soul.
The Village Halloween Parade's artistic director believes that if New Yorkers go to the parade tonight, participate, or watch the parade, it would have a transformative effect and heal the collective. At the head of the parade are Andy Warhol-esque objects.
The puppets that we're making for the head of the parade are looking at the world in this state of reverie, which is something like seeing the world for the first time through a child's eyes. And we've made giant, ordinary objects giant, and we have children looking at wonder at these things which are of the everyday. Toothbrushes, toilets, coffee cups, computers, every ordinary thing that you just don't even notice anymore, you know. But when you go into that state of reverie, suddenly the world seems new. And you can see things with a child's eyes. So that's one interpretation of what reverie means. And there'll be others that others are doing.
Some of the costumes, though, are going to be reflecting the political scene that we're seeing
today. Oh, for sure.
You're going to have the nasty woman, the bad hombre.
We're having pussies for Trump. We're having a whole float. His name is Sean Anderson, and he's making a float that has a punk rock song on it that he wrote about how Bernie had his throne stolen from him. And he's going to be having 20 dancing Hillarys and 20 dancing Bernies around his float while they sing this song. I've heard that hundreds of people are coming with statues of Donald Trump in various poses. I don't know. But I don't know, because, you know, one of the things about Halloween is that some people write me and tell me what they're doing, but a lot of people want it to be a surprise. So
I hear rumors. Show up.
They just show up. I hear rumors. My job is really to create a safe and beautiful environment for all New Yorkers to be able to express their wildest imaginations. So
Thank you. I just want to tell you that at the DNC, there was a woman who was all dressed up in a ball gown who was a Bernie supporter, and she knew he wasn't going to win, but she had to dress up anyway.
That's great. I think it's going to be fascinating whenever it's an election year, but this year in particular.
Well, thank you so much. We'll be either there or be watching.
Okay, we love BAI, too.
Jean Fleming is artistic director of the Village Halloween Parade. The parade can be seen live on various networks and on 6th Avenue, north of Spring Street to 16th Street, from 7 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. this evening. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Last night saw the only New York State Senate debate between New York Senior Senator Chuck Schumer and a little-known Republican conservative, Wendy Long. Long challenged Kirsten Gillibrand in the 2010 Senate race, but lost by a wide margin. The debate was broadcast on Time Warner Cable News, moderated by Liz Benjamin and Errol Lewis at Union College in Schenectady, New York. It began with Schumer commenting on FBI Director James Comey's decision to announce an investigation into emails related to Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server. The emails found on a shared computer used by the former couple, disgraced sexter Anthony Weiner and Hillary Clinton's aide, Huma Abedin.
When I heard about it, I found it hard to believe that Comey, who I thought had some degree of integrity, would do this.
But wait, it doesn't go against prosecutorial conduct. If you find new evidence, if it comes to light, in this case, you know, in the laptop of your old protege and friend, Anthony Weiner, I mean, who would have ever thought that it would have turned up there? But when something like that comes to light, I think it's the duty of the prosecutor to evaluate it. So I disagree that it should have been just ignored just because we are farther down the road.
Well, let me say this, and I've talked to a lot of prosecutors. For instance, if a grand jury is convened a month before an election, if certain witnesses are called, it's supposed to be kept secret because we're innocent until proven guilty, and letting that out can jaundice an election. What Comey did, I disrespectfully disagree with my opponent. What he did was appalling, and prosecutors from one end of America to another know it.
Schumer says even though he served on the Senate for 8 years with Hillary Clinton, he would speak up if he disagrees with her should she be elected president. One area of contention, he said, was a difference with Clinton on the Iran deal, where Schumer sided with Israel and most Republicans who did not support the deal. Chuck Schumer is poised to become the majority leader in the U.S. Senate if Democrats take over the Senate, or the minority leader if they don't. He takes over from Harry Reid, who is not seeking another term. In the debate last night, Schumer took aim at Donald Trump, saying he is a horrible candidate.
Some of the things he's done have been appalling. What he's called women, how he's made fun of the handicapped, how he has so many times demeaned different people in different groups. And it goes beyond that. That's why so many Republicans, the Bush family and others, have refused to endorse Donald Trump. And it's frankly not a question of whether he's more conservative or more liberal than previous Republican nominees. It's that he's just not fit to be president given his actions. George Will, far more conservative than me, maybe more conservative than you, Mrs. Long, has said he doesn't even want to be in the Republican Party if they can support Donald Trump because of how he's conducted himself. It goes beyond the specific ideology.
Ms. Long, would you like to, before we move on, defend or reiterate your support of the nominee?
Wendy Long says Trump has apologized for derogatory comments about women and then pivots.
These mistakes happen. People apologize. I have to say that I find it somewhat hypocritical of some on the left when they say, oh, we've got to cover our children's ears. I mean, if we just listen to the Howard Stern show and what, for example, Amy Schumer talks about on the Howard Stern show or some of her stand-up routines with the racism and the misogyny and all these things that are going on, or let's just take Hillary Clinton's Jay-Z and some of the rap stars that she's advancing to encourage young people to come out. Look at the words to some of these songs. Go read the lyrics to H.A.M.
Okay.
I mean, the level of vulgarity, I think, you know, this is the pot calling the kettle black.
I would just make one point. Neither Amy Schumer or Jay-Z or Howard Stern is running for president. I don't think most Americans would think they'd make good presidents either.
Meanwhile, Representative Elijah Cummings says FBI Director Comey should tell Congress and the public whether his agency is investigating Donald Trump's former campaign manager, Paul Manafort. This over possible ties to Russian interests. Democrats have been seeking an investigation into the former Trump campaign manager. And Cummings says there may be a double standard. This where Comey reveals the FBI is looking into new emails, which may have a bearing on the use of a private email server by Clinton if the FBI is investigating Trump's campaign manager and keeping that secret. Turning to local news, Ben Max of Gotham Gazette has the week ahead in New York politics.
It's another busy week in New York politics, but of course the attention here in New York and around the country is on the final days of the presidential election. Election Day is a week from tomorrow, Tuesday, November 8th. But of course, next Tuesday doesn't just see the presidential election on the ballot. There are races for Congress and down to the state legislative races here in New York, with control of the state Senate very much up in the air as we approach Election Day. There are several key swing districts which will determine the outcome and whether the mainline Democrats or the Republicans will have the upper hand in negotiating with the Independent Democratic Conference to see who controls the state Senate in Albany. Even though the state assembly is also on the ballot, the state assembly is heavily Democratic and will remain so. As for New York City politics this week, the week got off to a fast start. Mayor Bill de Blasio held a bill signing Monday afternoon at City Hall. A couple of the highlights are that he signed bills into law that require city agencies to ask for voluntary information from people seeking city services around gender, sexuality, language spoken, ancestry, and ethnic origin. The purpose behind this is to give the city a better idea of those who are seeking city services. There are also some new laws now about energy consumption in the city, and the NYPD will now be required to publish its patrol guide online and to make edits to it whenever edits are made. As for the rest of the week, on Tuesday morning, one highlight is that Crane's New York Business is holding a 2016 New York City Summit, Getting Ready for 9 Million New Yorkers. Mayor de Blasio will deliver the keynote remarks explaining to attendees what New York City is doing to prepare for the time when it hits 9 million residents. We're at about 8.5 million now. The conference will then feature several panels on jobs, on housing, and on transportation. On Tuesday evening, there will be a city hearing on the de Blasio administration's proposals to change the deed restriction removal process. This is the issue that flared up around Rivington House, the very controversial sale of a former nursing home to real estate developers. The de Blasio administration is proposing rules changes as to how that process will go in the future. Meanwhile, there is city council legislation being considered that would formally change the laws around the deed restriction removal process. What's at stake at the hearing on Tuesday, and this is just a public hearing without definitive decisions being made, is administrative changes to the rules via City Hall. Also to be aware of this week, there are several other interesting panel events to highlight, including one at Columbia University's School of International and Public Affairs on domestic policy in the 2016 presidential election, what's at stake. There's also a variety of city council hearings this week, as usual, including one on Wednesday where the Committee on Public Safety will meet to discuss several proposed bills that would modify the nuisance abatement law. You can see the full list of events to be aware of this week in New York politics at Gotham Gazette. For WBAI, this is Ben Max.
In other local news, the Freelancers Union says a bill which was passed by the New York City Council designed to protect freelance workers from wage theft is a model for similar legislation in other cities and states. Andrea Sears reports.
The Freelance Isn't Free Act passed unanimously late last week. A report issued last year found that 70% of New York City freelance workers reported problems getting paid. Caitlin Pierce with Freelancers Union says the measure will give them extra leverage if they have to take a client to court.
The freelancer would be able to get double damages as well as attorney's fees, and clients who have repeated offenses might be liable for civil penalties as well.
The bill also requires a written contract for all work over $800 and establishes a formal mechanism for the Department of Consumer Affairs to enforce freelancers' labor rights. It's a work category that includes self-employed people in a variety of fields, from writing, editing, and photography to music and bookkeeping. The Freelancers Union represents about 300,000 freelancers nationwide. According to Pierce, those who aren't getting paid are losing an average of $6,000 a year.
It's really common for our members to go into debt, to rack up huge credit card bills, and to even have to rely on government assistance as a result of non-payment.
38% of workers in the New York City metropolitan area do freelance work, contributing $230 billion to the economy. The Freelance Isn't Free Act is the first of its kind in the nation, but will only apply in New York City. Pierce notes that wage theft is a problem facing freelancers across the country. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
In other news, Airbnb hosts in New York are worried about a new law. It could lead them to being fined up to $7,500 for renting out their apartments. People who occasionally rent their living spaces for side income say they are getting unfairly swept up, this in a law aimed mostly at commercial operators. Airbnb has filed a lawsuit to block the law. The company says it rewards the hotel industry at the expense of ordinary New Yorkers. And finally, if you filled up your tank in New Jersey yesterday or even today, you paid $1.90, $1.92, $1.99 a gallon, but no more. Tuesday, the boost of 23 cents a gallon will catapult the state's tax from the second lowest in the nation to the sixth highest. And that's some of the news for Monday, October 31st, 2016. The news was produced with Mitchell Cohen, Ben Max, Andrea Sears, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.